Welcome to the Sharp Angles Prop and DFS Show for week two of the NFL playoffs. I'm your host, Todd Burrows, and I'm joined by both Ryan McChrystal, who will be giving us a prop for each game, and Adam Wilde, our showdown expert, and he and I are going to go game by game using the DraftKings playoff slate for the DFS portion of the show. Meaning that while we will go game by game and give you a prop for each game from Ryan, Adam and I will talk about plays from the game within those confines. I also want to say that even though one round of the playoffs is done, we still have three more weeks to make money in betting and DFS. Let us help you do that with our postseason package, which gives you Warren Sharp's betting recommendations and Rich Rebar's outstanding game previews. Use the code PLAYOFFS for 50% off either our weekly or full postseason plan. And let me tell you, folks, there are a number of them as I get an email every time, and my email has been going nuts. Also, if you could please subscribe and give the thumbs up on our YouTube channel if you're watching, or if you listen to us via audio, if you could rate and review the podcast, it definitely helps us out. Boys, welcome back. Exciting to have both of you here again, and looking forward to really breaking down this slate.
Yeah, excited to dive into it again.
Yep, I probably should have said one name so that one person could have spoken, but as a host, I came up a little short, much like the Dallas Cowboys last week. No, that's not true, too. They didn't come up a little short. They came up really short. But we've got four really exciting games, a good DFS slate. We're going to go, as I mentioned, game by game. And then we'll start with Ryan giving his prop for each of the game. Adam and I primarily will go through the DFS portion with Ryan pitching in as needed. Because he is one of the brightest guys out there, and I always enjoy getting his input. So game number one is the Houston Texans and the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens look to have Mark Andrews back, and we will get into that a little bit further. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of the DFS slate as it relates to this game, Ryan, why don't you tell us who your prop for this game is?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a CJ Stroud prop here. And despite his great performance last week, I'm actually going to take the under on his passing yards, which is available at 242.5 yards. This is really mostly about the Ravens defense. I don't necessarily think Stroud is going to have a bad game by any means. I think that if this is a low scoring game, he could be competitive and maybe even pull off an upset. But I think that the under here is a pretty safe play. Based on the Ravens pass defense, they're ranked in the top 10 of total pass defense. And Stroud has played six games against teams ranked in the top 10 of total pass defense this season, including a game against the Ravens at the beginning of the year. He's topped this number in only two of those six games, and his average output is only 199 yards per game. So these types of defenses have really limited what the Texans passing game has been able to accomplish. And I think the main reason for that is the teams that rank at the top of the pass defense rankings are typically teams that they avoid mistakes, they avoid giving up big plays. That certainly describes the Ravens defense. They rank second in the league in fewest pass plays of 25 yards or more, only giving up 22 of those plays all season. And that's just a huge part of the Texans offense. And it's what makes them good. It's what has made Stroud such a revelation in his rookie years, his ability to generate big plays down the field, but these types of teams can limit it. And so in this particular prop, I think it makes me lean towards the under because Stroud actually picked up 36% of his yardage this year on plays gaining 25 or more yards. And that was the second highest rate in the league. So a really huge percentage of the Texans offense comes on these big plays. So going up against a team like the Ravens, it's going to make that very difficult for them to have multiple chunk yardage plays in the passing game. I think that they're able to suppress the Texans passing offense a little bit. As I said, I think Stroud still plays well. I just don't think he's going to be able to have those huge plays down the field that he's had a lot, including last week.
Yeah. And if you add the fact that, and if you mentioned this and I missed it, with both Tank Dell and now Noah Brown on IR, it limits, it makes it even easier for the Ravens to contain Nico Collins. And the other guys, I just don't know if they've, you know, John Metchie, you could argue, has a profile. But even he in college, if I'm correct, Ryan, he was more the guy who would take the short pass and take it long than take the long pass.
Yeah, he was not really a dangerous field stretcher at Alabama. So, yeah, he's not going to seamlessly step into that role.
All right, let's get into the DFS portion, Adam, and Ryan. But before we get into the specifics of who we like on this game, Adam, I'm really interested in looking for from you kind of a top-down view of a four-game slate and some of your initial thoughts on this four-game slate in specifics.
Yeah, well, first off, got to give flowers to DraftKings. This is one of the best price slates I think I've ever seen, at least this season. It's pretty much every player is a good point per dollar value. So I can make a case for probably at least four quarterbacks, I would say. And so really you get to a point, and this happens in the playoffs, of course, because you're down to good teams. Good teams have good players. Once you get to this point in the playoffs, you're really looking for reasons to not like guys to narrow your player pool, as opposed to in the season when you have 13 game slates, you're like, I like this guy because of this. I like this guy. Well, you can find a reason to like all of these players. So you have to find reasons why you don't like certain players because of their prices, things like that. So really you're starting with a player pool where basically everyone in every game is viable. And then you have to figure out reasons to narrow that player pool down to get to your viable 20 max. It's super easy to have like a watered down player pool. And then you get to, you know, the end of Sunday night and you have white dots all over and none of them are really substantial caches. And that's just because you had way too big of a player pool. So it doesn't feel great. But when you get down to these, you really have to get that player pool down. I'd rather see a trillion white dots all the way to the left than just have them all scattered about and win $20.
Yeah, I think that I took your advice last week on that. And in general, it's something I struggle with, narrowing my player pool. And ever since I stopped really narrowing it to where most weeks I'd have 50%. And part of it is because DraftKings pricing has gotten so much better and so much tougher. It's hard to find the three or four guys you want to put 70% of your money on. But a few years ago when I was doing really well, I'd identify the 5-6 favorite plays of the week. And a lot of times I would do, it was nothing more than swapping out for a low owned stack. Yep. And then, you know, picking the one guy who fit the salary left or two, you know, and the defense. Last week I took your advice. I also liked it, but I went like 60, 70% Aaron Jones. There were a couple other guys and it was a shame that I didn't make any money when my number one player I had, you know, about 70% of.
Did you play any Kareem Hunt?
I did. I played a little bit
of Kareem Hunt. I felt good about that one.
I played some last minute I got on Luke Musgrove. I thought that he was a really solid play because he, you know, he's a good tight end and no one was playing him and the salary was low. I figured, you know, but the one thing I did wrong was, and again, it, you know, picking winners and losers sometimes based on your feelings rather than going against ownership. I did have on the two game slate a lot of Stroud, but it was 2-1 Flacco to Stroud. And the next day, you know, I think one of the key things to do in these slates, you already made the case for how there's a lot of really good plays. It almost becomes whoever the lowest owned guy is, go real, you know, at a quarterback, you know, pick somebody who's going to be 10% and go 50% on him, because if he hits, that gives you the leverage. And then with a narrowed player pool automatically, because there is only four teams, you're very likely to get a good combination. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So if you would have had Baker Mayfield last week, now you're getting,
and I did.
you're getting a 10% roster percentage and you have probably a 10% chance that he's the optimal quarterback. But of course, if you hit that 10%, almost every one of your lineups is going to cash. So that's great. That's going to be something we're going to have to implement this week too. You can't necessarily just look at who's, because you get blocked too. Like, so the block is huge on these short slates. And by block, I mean a player that's blocking you out of cashing. So if Christian McCaffrey's over 50% and he's optimal, you don't get to cash if you didn't play Christian McCaffrey, that sort of thing. So you have to identify which players are going to be blocks, like maybe Christian McCaffrey this week, and then you can branch off from there. Like I had Dak, like a ton of Dak stacks, and they ended up coming out big.
I did too. I was 50% Dak.
Yeah.
But again, you got to hit, you know, I was Dak with Lamb, and it was kind of,
that was
I had 70% Brandon Cooks, and it only takes one or two guys like that on a short slate to sink you.
And that's worth talking about too, as pertains to this slate, because that was something we talked about last week, was locking players with your quarterback. And I said, just lock Lamb with Dak, and 99% of the time that's going to work. But I will say the optimizer that I was using had a ton of Dak lineups without Lamb in it. And I elected to lock in Ferguson and Lamb. So all of my 20 Dak lineups had Ferguson and Lamb. And then I had a rule to include a third option, which was Pollard or Cooks. Both of them hit, and that was great. But I had Lamb in every single one of them. He did okay. You still could have cashed. I cashed a few lineups because Lamb came in like 20 points there at the end, but it just wasn't enough to keep up with the other players in his price range, like Amon-Ra St. Brown. So that's something to consider going into this week, going forward into next year. If you have a quarterback that's a slam dunk with one of his receivers, a la maybe Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs this week, that might be a strategy that you employ to stack them without their primary receiver. It's not going to hit very often, but it hit last week, and pretty much everybody who had Dak stacks without Lamb probably cashed last week.
Yeah, and you know, to me, the key is to try and win the tournament, right? I don't mind losing a third of my budget each week if, you know, that one week that I, you know, have a big payday. Right. And Ferguson was the guy that I identified, of course, to fade. And when I say fade, I still had some, but, you know, he was going to be one of the more owned tight ends. So yeah. I thought Brandon Cooks had just, you know, and that's the thing. When you make a bet like this, you can be wrong and you just live with it, because I still think Cooks was the better process play, in the sense that he was low owned. And he probably had as much chance as Ferguson to really go off. And Ferguson had the game of his life, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, three touchdowns.
It's just the nature of it. But we talk about process. So from we got the top-down view. As far as the overall quarterbacks, right now, we've got 20% of Brock Purdy and about the same of Lamar Jackson, who obviously is in this game. Lowest ownership on Mayfield and C.J. Stroud from this game. That puts me squarely interested in Stroud if he stays 5%. I don't think he's a great play necessarily. I agree with what Ryan is saying, but we've seen C.J. Stroud sometimes do these weird things. And he's not going to be my main piece, but he's definitely in my early thoughts as being that secondary 20% type of guy who, you know, if he's 5% owned and he goes off, can win you a GPP, especially since it is pretty much playing with Nico. Your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, so if I'm looking at the slate, CJ Stroud seems okay. He's got a pretty bad game environment though, but from the standpoint of if you're playing like 150 max and putting him in, like you said, putting him in 20% instead of 5%, I'm all for that, especially since he's got a narrower target tree because Noah Brown and Tank Dell are both on IR, so it's a little bit easier to predict who he's going to be completing passes to. But I will say, since there are so many quarterback options and they're all priced so well, you probably aren't going to get a quarterback over 20% this week, which is kind of crazy on a short slate. Usually you'd see like Josh Allen at 40% or Lamar Jackson at 35%. You're probably not going to see that this week because they're going to cannibalize ownership from each other there at the top. So you can probably just build around whatever game you like the most. And that's how I don't land on CJ Stroud. I guess we'll talk about it later, but I think that Goff and Mayfield are probably the best targets for the slate.
Yeah. And when I say that, you know, again, I don't do any research until Friday other than looking at early ownership and having an opinion based on everything I've known up until this point. So it could clearly change. But the overriding factor is on a slate like this, where you're the most important thing to me at quarterback is if no one's going to be over 20%, put your big boy pants on and find who you think is the best play and play 60, 70% of it. Right.
Absolutely.
You know, and for me, that won't be Lamar Jackson because, and again, recency bias is that he came off this really huge last week that he played when it mattered and he won, you know, he won the best ball mania, you know, he won all this money, but it's a team that will run if you let them.
Yeah.
And there's a chance that they're up 2-3 touchdowns in, you know, the second quarter of this game. And then it doesn't make me want to go 60-70 on Lamar. Am I crazy?
Yeah, so this is exactly why it's difficult to hitch your wagon to Lamar Jackson is because he's extremely efficient. So even when he does have those 30-point performances, he does not always drag his team along with him. Like if you have Jared Goff, you can bring three receivers along with him. And if Jared Goff has 300 yards and three touchdowns, you're going to get ceiling performances out of multiple players. With Lamar Jackson, when he has a 30-point game, you're lucky to get like 20 points out of Zay Flowers or 18 points out of Isaiah Likely. It's really, really hard to predict his target tree. So then you can just say, okay, well, then I'm just going to go ahead and single stack Lamar Jackson. Well, if you single stack Lamar Jackson, the less players that you have stacked with your quarterback, the more condensed your lineup construction is going to be. So you're going to match more people because that's how people want to play Lamar Jackson. The best way if you're going to play Lamar Jackson is to play him with multiple receivers. It's just difficult to get him to hit with multiple receivers. So it's almost better to just avoid. You can make the case for playing him with one receiver, and that's fine because he will have a 28-point game out of Isaiah Likely sometimes. But the problem is every other Lamar lineup also had Isaiah Likely probably. So it gets difficult to differentiate. When you get into Jared Goff and Baker Mayfield, you have so many different ways that you can cycle through team stacks.
At running back, Christian McCaffrey showing over 40% ownership, Isaiah Pacheco mid-30s, and pretty much all the other good starting running backs are in the 20s. You're not going to get like some great ownership, but there is, you know, there is in this game both Justice Hill and Gus the Bus under 10%. Ryan, I'm going to throw this one to you. Anyone, you know, do you like either Gus or Justice Hill?
I think if you're going to target really any running back in this game, you're kind of just throwing blindfolded darts, right? Like any of them could get a touchdown and could, you know, have a decent stat line, but I don't know how to really sort through that. Obviously, because of the Ravens, the way they spread the ball around. It can be tough to predict sometimes, and you know the slight edge towards Gus is obviously reflected in the salary. So like it can be tough to sort through that. This game almost feels like for the most part stay away unless you're just purposely being contrarian, right? And you just want to put one of those guys right in because you know ownership is going to be very low.
Adam, Singletary pushing 30. Your thoughts on him?
I don't think that Singletary or Pacheco are enough of a difference to really warrant being that highly rostered. And it didn't work out last week either. The only case you make for Singletary is that he's 5,700. So you've got a pretty good case for him there. But real quick on Christian McCaffrey, I have 40% ownership on him as well. I would be shocked to see his ownership at 40%, I would think that it's going to be significantly higher, like 65 to 70. I would definitely advise either being 100% or 0% on Christian McCaffrey because that is a very wide range on his ownership. And I can tell you from personal experience, it feels really, really bad to have 70% of a player and lose money every time they score because you didn't have enough.
Yeah, I have to see how it ends up personally. At wide receiver, pretty balanced overall. 5 to 6 guys pushing 30%, including both Lions, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Josh Reynolds. From this game, Nico is pushing 30%, Zay Flowers 15%. And then pretty much, Adam, all of them are low-owned. Your thoughts on the wide receivers in this game?
Yeah, I guess that Zay Flowers would be the only one that I'm super interested in. Nico Collins obviously is going to be a pretty decent option, but I don't see how much you stand to gain there. There's Mike Evans in his price range, and then there's also Stephon Diggs in his price range, and both of them are going to be about half of the ownership and have similar ceilings, which are very high ceilings, right? But I don't know how much you stand to gain from playing a 30% Nico Collins in a poor game environment against one of the tougher secondaries in the league. He projects
without
well.
Good weather too. The weather's well, not
yeah, poor
be great
weather.
There.
Yeah, so he his median projection projects fine. Hard to avoid him given his usage recently, but there's not a lot of warm and fuzzy from playing him either. I mean, you've got an uphill battle if you play him.
Yeah, I think that is very fair. I'm not really interested too much in an Odell Beckham. I do think in general you have to pick one or two low-priced, low-owned guys to go deep on. But again, I think there are going to be better weather in other places with much more likely shootouts than here. Let's finish up at this tight end and this game. And, you know, we did kind of the overview of the position. We're going to go through the other games a little quicker. Tight end sees both Kelce and Kittle pushing 30% ownership. Right now, I want to check Mark Andrews, see if they updated ownership on Mark Andrews, because he was at 5% and it looks like he's still there. I expect Andrews to end up higher than that.
Yeah.
I think a guy that I'm kind of interested in is Schultz. We talked about both of those Houston guys out. Schultz is a professional receiver. He's not exciting. The salary is good. My initial thought, Adam, is, and we talked about it on our conference call with Warren, there's nothing about the matchup at tight end with the Ravens that makes you any more scared than anything else. Your thoughts on him?
Yeah, it's a fine matchup for him. So he's going to be in the same situation as he was in, week 17? He had 7 targets, 5 receptions, 42 yards. It's probably similar to what you're going to see again from him. Last week, he only had 2 targets. So, I mean, but he still played, 78% of the snaps. So there's not really a lot of projectable opportunity. We've had enough of a sample size without Noah Brown and without Tank Dell to see that he's not gaining or losing much opportunity. Like, he had 11 targets with Noah Brown healthy. So I do think that he's a fine option. I don't think he's any better of an option because of the condensed route tree. I will say that so much attention should be dedicated to Nico Collins that Dalton Schultz will be the only other viable option. And I hope that that's how the Baltimore Ravens play this, because I don't want to play a ton of Nico Collins. And if that's the case, then Dalton Schultz is a perfectly fine one-off to have, and his roster percentage should stay pretty low.
All right. So basically, Ryan, I'm just going to go to you. And, you know, is there anything out of everything we talked about in this game that you want to comment on?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to make a case for actually having a little bit of exposure to Isaiah Likely, because you've got a player coming off a multi-week injury. This game has blowout potential. What if this game is in hand in the first half and they say, you know what, we don't really need to send Mark Andrews out there? And Isaiah Likely ends up getting a good share of the workload in the second half. Maybe he gets a late garbage time touchdown. And obviously his ownership is going to be very low. Get with Mark, assuming we hear for certain that Mark Andrews is at full strength and going to play. I think that's a possibility to happen. So having a small exposure to him I think is pretty reasonable with his ownership probably very near zero.
I want to hear more about Andrew's health. So, you know, I think that is a very interesting opportunity. But I do have other tight ends that are cheap that I like as well. I mean, I'm an Isaiah Likely truther. I had about 20% in best ball this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of helped me a lot during the playoffs to not really just completely suck this year.
The problem is that he's 4,700. I think you make a great case. The problem is he's 4,700 and like Dalton Schultz is 44. Dalton Kincaid's 48. So, right. But I agree. The Millie Maker is definitely a place that you throw Isaiah Likely in because the Ravens, not only do they love to run two tight end sets, they love to run three tight end sets. And Isaiah Likely has definitely made the case to be on the field more often.
Yeah.
Texans also a very high rate of too high safety usage, which obviously that's always something you look for tight ends.
All right. I like it. And let's see where ownership plays out on these guys as we move forward. Game two is the Green Bay Packers, the Dallas Slayers, as I like to call them, going into San Francisco to play the favorite to probably win it all, the Niners. What is the prop for this game, Ryan?
Well, anyone that's been listening to the show for the past 2 months or so can probably guess, despite the fact that it was a loser last week, I'm going to take Jordan Love's completions over 22.5. We lost this last week, and I don't feel bad about it at all because who could have predicted that game script? I mean, this is a game script type of prop, right? You need the game to flow a certain way. And with the game being in hand at halftime, there was just no way he was going to hit the over on it. He was 16 of 21 in the game, but only 5 of those passes came in the second half. So he didn't even get the attempts over the number that he needed last week. But there was just no way we could have seen that coming. So I think that was just purely an outlier game. We have every reason to believe that in this game, the 49ers are at worst going to be competitive. I just can't imagine the Packers come out with another shocking blowout again. So at worst, it's a competitive game, which is going to keep his attempts high enough. And likely the 49ers are controlling this game in the second half, which obviously boosts his attempts. And as I said, he was 16 of 21. So sort of what we expected from the offense played out. He was completing passes at a very high rate. That's what we need. I mean, if he came out with a typical 30, 32 attempt, something like that, he was going to hit the over if it were a more competitive game. As I said, we've been playing this prop for a while now. It's been a winner in 10 of the previous 11 weeks. And, you know, just to go into the reasoning again for anybody who maybe hasn't listened before, it has to do with the fact that they've become a very conservative offense. They opened up the year surprisingly aggressive. Love threw downfield 10 or more yards at the second highest rate in the league through the first four games. Since that split in week 5, he ranks 19th by that metric. So they've been much more of a conservative passing attack, which obviously boosts your completion percentage, so you don't need as many attempts to hit an over on a prop like this. And through all of this, we've really haven't seen the line on his completions prop rise that much. It's been around 21 or 22 almost every week. So in a game where we think they're going to be playing from behind and probably have a very high pass rate in the second half, I'm despite the loss last week, I'm back to loving this prop again.
Yeah, and I think it's a great one. You know, I think it's even better because they should absolutely, at very least, be in a shootout. And at worst, be getting blown out to where he has to throw the ball a lot. I like it a lot. All right. So, as mentioned, Adam, Brock Purdy is the highest owned quarterback, only at 20%. Love is sub 10%. Your thoughts on the two quarterbacks in this game for DFS?
I don't have a ton of interest in Love. I understand why Brock Purdy is is expected to have the highest roster percentage. But if you look at how you're going to stack Brock Purdy, you're going to want to triple stack him. And if you triple stack him, you're spending a lot of money. You're spending $6,900 on Brandon Ayuk. You're spending $7,700 on Deebo Samuel. You could stack him with Christian McCaffrey, who's $8,800. George Kittle's not super cheap at $5,200. There's no cheap options that you feel comfortable stacking him with. Super condensed target tree, so you can't even go down the depth chart like you can with the Lions or I guess you could even do with the Packers if you chose to stack Love. So I get why he projects well. His median projection looks great. But if you go to, you know, look at your lineups and your optimizer, you're not going to feel great about any of the lineups that it spits out. So I probably won't have any Brock Purdy, even though I know he's going to be the highest roster quarterback on the slate.
Very interesting. I was not thinking that way myself. Let's move to running back Christian McCaffrey. So I'm seeing 40%. You think that he is going to be higher than that, right?
I do, yep.
Well, I think that is going to, you know, so that goes back to something we talked about last week, which is at what point is it a sunk cost, right? Mm-hmm. To where you can't get enough leverage on the field to make it worthwhile doing it. What's the highest ownership that you want to see on McCaffrey before you go under?
Gosh, that's a good question. Probably 50%. If I saw him at 50%, I'd probably go zero. But I will only go zero or 100 on a guy like Christian McCaffrey. He's certainly a slate definer. 88's really not enough money for him, even on this short slate. We don't have that many elite options to compare him with. I mean, you have Aaron Jones, who has a similar opportunity, but horrible, horrible game environment for Aaron Jones. I'm hoping that the Green Bay Packers are as reliant on the run, even if they get down big against the 49ers, because it seems to be such a large part of their offense since Aaron Jones returned healthy. But that's just a hope. I mean, Christian McCaffrey is going to be involved in every single game script, no matter what. 9.5-point home favorite. No weather to worry about. I mean, it's a perfect Christian McCaffrey game. And rest. He's had rest to come back from his injuries. It's just sets up too well for Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, for me, it's absolutely a case where if I only had two buttons to push, 50, I mean, zero or 100, I would push 100.
Mm-hmm. That's probably what I'll do.
I never go 100. I always just, it's just too nerve-wracking for me. So I'll go like 90 or 10. You know, that way, at least if he goes nuts, at least I have, you know, a little bit of chance of, right, of hitting that one lineup, and vice versa. If he shits the bed, I want at least 10% chance of, but again, you know, once he gets up to 60%, I don't think 90% is enough. Right. No, so at that point, maybe I do swing down to 10. Mm-hmm. A lot to be determined. And a lot of it depends on, is there another stud at 8,800 that I would rather have? And I right now I'm not seeing that. At wide receiver, Debo is under 10%, Ayuk 20%. Kittle is, like mentioned, is close to 30. Is it just a matter typically with the Niners, Adam, where we play the lowest owned guy?
Yeah, I'd be comfortable with even a one-off in this game, even if you have, like, I wrote up Brandon Ayuk in the article for this week. I think that he's fine at 6,900 as a one-off. The problem is how the 49ers have been winning games has just been it hasn't been conventional. Like they blow teams out so badly. And you just look at the box score and you're like, how did they score that many points? It's just very unconventional how they dismantle teams. And you get to the end of the game and you see one player had a really good game. You might see 30 points for Debo Samuel and then two for Kittle and six for Ayuk. And so it's really hard, even if you wanted to triple stack Brock Purdy with his three top options, because the target tree is so condensed, you're not going to be able to afford anything else. And they're not all going to hit because they never do.
All right, let's go to I'm going to say that I like Debo a lot at that ownership. Debo, yeah. You know, again, to that theory of, and especially if I decide to go under on McCaffrey, I probably, because Debo's the other guy, you know, not that can't give you a 35-point game, but Debo we've seen do it quite often.
Sure.
Ryan, anything from your knowledge base on the type of plays the Packers are more susceptible to that would lead us to have any more insight on which Niner to play?
Well, I think the fact that the Packers are one of the teams that leans much more heavily on single high coverage, that's going to benefit Ayuk a lot. Anytime that they think that they're in man coverage, they'll take shots downfield with him, and he leads the team in target share against single high coverage at basically 10 percentage points higher than Debo. So he's going to see a pretty significant boost in target share compared to Debo in this matchup. If when they're playing a team with two high coverages, it's the exact opposite. Debo is more of the, you know, obviously the guy that they will use more on underneath routes, and it's a little bit easier to find those against two high coverage. We've got more options in the middle of the field. So using Ayuk in this matchup definitely makes sense to me, because you have the potential that when they do take those shots downfield, he, you know, has a few big plays, maybe even a big touchdown that could really set a really high ceiling for him.
I'm glad I asked. Thank you, Ryan. All right, let's move to tight end. Obviously, I've mentioned Kittle a couple times. Let's also, Adam, talk about the Green Bay wide receivers. I mean, the prices have gone up. There's like 16 of them that you want, you know, that are all viable. Does that take you off them completely? Or is there one that you just think, you know what, this guy's cheap, he doesn't have any ownership, I'm gonna go 25-30% on him?
This is going to be the first week in a really long time that I am off the Jaden Reed train. So 5,200. Also, I believe he's dealing with injury, unless I'm misremembering. Yeah, so Jaden Reed's also dealing with an injury going into this game. Christian Watson should be back to full health, and Christian Watson's a whole 1,000 less than Jaden Reed, but I also don't want Christian Watson. That might be a personal thing, because I can never, ever get the Christian Watson games right, even when he had a couple of them this year.
That might be the reason to play him. I don't think he's going to hit this week, 50%.
I that's the problem in showdown. Every time I get comfortable with investing in Christian Watson, even at captain, I'm surely let down, and then he'll have three touchdowns in the next week. But you're right, you could hit on the three touchdowns in this game. It wouldn't be a bad game environment for him to do that, considering they should have to throw more often than they have in other games, assuming that Aaron Jones is not going to be able to do what he did against the Dallas Cowboys. But I guess Christian Watson would have to be the one that you're comfortable with. He's theoretically the most healthy. Well, I guess Romeo Doubs is the most healthy. Romeo Doubs' performance last week was really strange, and he's the most expensive now. I don't believe that I invest in the, I guess that should be the question, in or out on Romeo Doubs.
Yeah. That's why I didn't win money last week.
I had
so much Doubs last year
in
best ball. This year, I thought he was too expensive. I didn't play him at all in DFS this year, and it never hurt me. And I literally said to myself, I'm not even going to put in 10 or 15% possibility for the optimizer, because he just hasn't hurt me. And he, between him and Ferguson, that's, you know, after getting everything else right, that's why I didn't win money. At tight end, you've got Kittle at 30%. I mean, Kittle's one of those guys to me, like Derrick Henry used to be. You don't play him when he's 30%, and you play him when he's 8%. And right now, Kraft at 15%. I have no interest with Musgrave back. I will have some interest in Musgrave if he continues to be, you know, sub 5% where he is now. Your quick thoughts on the tight ends, because we need to get to the next game.
You pretty much summed it up. Kittle's roster percentage is too high, and I like Mark Andrews in that range if Mark Andrews is completely healthy. And then, Musgrave is probably going to play more snaps than Kraft this week. So, give me Musgrave.
Awesome. All right, next up is the game between the Lions and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa going into Detroit. Ryan, who's your prop for this game?
Yeah, going with a player we've talked about a lot throughout the season, David Montgomery, anytime touchdown. Seen this line available as low as -115, which is like, you know, that's priced pretty close to a 50-50 prop. And I don't see how you could possibly come to the conclusion that odds of him scoring a touchdown in a game the Lions are favored by 6.5 points is 50-50 or even close to it. He scored in 12 of their 15 games this year. He sees 56% of the Lions carries inside the 5-yard line, 85% of their carries inside the 2-yard line. Their team total is set to 27.5 in this game. So basically looking at, you know, expectations of 3, maybe 4 touchdowns. He scores touchdowns in these games. It's pretty straightforward. I was really shocked to see the line where it was. I mean, this is a prop that I've played at certain points this year, even when it's been at one, you know, minus 130, minus 135 in that range. I won't play a ton of touchdown props when they get to that number, but he's just been so consistent, and their usage of him is so consistent that there's nothing fluky about it. When they get down there, they're using Montgomery. Gibbs has a smattering of touches throughout the year, but especially in a game like this, Montgomery's going to get the touch. They're not screwing around and trying to get Gibbs a touchdown. They're giving it to the guy that they trust the most, which is clearly Montgomery. So this is probably my favorite prop of the week.
Awesome. You know that I have been on David Montgomery with you the whole year. And Adam and I will get into that more in a second. But first, you know, I mentioned, Adam, that the two Lions wide receivers look to be two of the highest owned early. I was way over on Josh Reynolds last week. I'm not playing him at 25-30%.
No.
But the stack, if you include Goff with the two of them, Goff, it's one of those weird dynamics where the two wide receivers have heavy ownership, but the quarterback doesn't.
Yeah.
Does that make you want to play more Goff to lower the roster percentage, or does it make you just want to fade the Lions' passing game and focus more on the running game?
Yeah, when you see that, like one-offs like that that have ownership so high, that's just people wanting to have their cake and eat it too. They want a different quarterback, but they think the wide receiver is going to do well. Ultimately, when you have two wide receivers with such high ownership, the quarterback is going to have to perform well as well if all of the field is going to hit value on that ownership. So it's just a glaring indicator to play Jared Goff. It is going to drag up his ownership because a lot of people are going to come to that realization by Sunday anyways. But Goff's ownership is going to settle in around 15% or something like that, pretty close to what Mayfield's is going to be too. But Jared Goff has so many options that you can stack with too, that you can separate that. You could make a max one rule between Amon-Ra St. Brown and Josh Reynolds. Make sure you're including Sam Laporta, Jamison Williams, include Gibbs for a little bit of an interesting passing stack. I know that he could get a receiving touchdown pretty easily. So there's a ton of ways to uniquely stack Goff, and that's why he's my favorite quarterback of the slate.
Yeah, I'm not there with you. But I see the play. I think he's going to get a little steamed as we get closer. And, you know, to me, it's similar to Baltimore, where if they're ahead, they run the ball, right? We've seen it time and time again. If they're ahead, they run the ball. And again, I'm still forming my thoughts for the week, but my initial lean would be to be under on those guys and maybe play a lot of Sam Laporta solo. You know,
sure.
He looked healthy. We know he's talented. If Kelce and Kittle are going to take up 60% ownership and Laporta's sub 10%, that, you know, again, there's a lot to building teams and to getting the optimizer ready to go. Mm-hmm. But initial thoughts are to me to either play the running backs overweight, because the running backs also have low ownership because you have to pick between the two of them, or Laporta. I'm kind of throwing all the Lions together in one mess here. Your thoughts on the rest of the Lions and strategy? Well,
so I guess the David Montgomery and Jameer questions will come up, but I think because...
No, that was the question, so...
Okay, all right, yeah. So Devin Singletary is 400 less than David Montgomery. So it's going to be pretty difficult for me to justify playing them both on this slate, even though that is something I love to do, especially in showdown. But when you have a running back that projects really well, one of the better projections on the slate at 400 less, even though it's a worse game environment, I guess since David Montgomery is so touchdown dependent and I can't stack him with Goff, I haven't been on him as much. But if you are going to fade these receivers that are really, really highly owned for the Lions, a great way to do it would be with David Montgomery. So he should certainly be in your player pool. Last week, almost every game that I didn't have Jahmyr Gibbs, I have David Montgomery, and that's probably the approach that I might take this week as well.
Awesome. All right, let's go to the other side of this game and Tampa Bay. Let's just hit all the different players on this team now. I don't have much interest in Baker. I don't have much interest in Rashad at 25%, but that could change. But I have a lot of interest in Mike Evans. Mike Evans is that other 8,800 guy. He dropped some big plays last week. He was this close to having a huge game. I have a lot of interest in Mike Evans early, unless you could talk me off him.
No, Mike Evans is probably my favorite player on the slate. Maybe Stephon Diggs. So Mike Evans would probably be second, but those are the two top plays for me in the write-up for this week. But Baker Mayfield's the other quarterback I like. So if I do play two quarterbacks in 20 max, it will be the other quarterback from the same game, just because their good games correlate. It's not, I'd rather not hedge. I'd rather like build on my bet. So if I'm playing 12 lineups that Jared Goff does well, he does well in games where Baker Mayfield does well. So then my other eight lineups might be Mike Evans with Baker Mayfield. And Baker Mayfield has a lot of good stacking options too, just like the Lions do. So you have Rashad White at 25%. Does seem a little high, but that's not too crazy on these short slates. It's probably going to be lower than that just because James Cook, I think, will get steamed up a little bit more as we get close. For some reason, every time it gets cold, we like to play the running back from that game. So I think that James Cook is going to end up higher than what he's being projected at right now. And then that's going to directly correlate to Rashad White's ownership going down. So I don't mind playing Rashad White with Baker Mayfield, but Mike Evans would be the type of guy, if I'm going to play Baker Mayfield, I'll probably lock Mike Evans with him.
Yeah, when I said I don't have a lot of interest in White, I mean as a solo play.
Sure.
I love him. If I'm going to play Baker, I think he's definitely got to be in the optimizer for those runs. Ryan, you have a thought on Mike Evans?
Yeah, I'm right there with you and loving Mike Evans in this matchup. The Lions are the perfect team for him to go up against. Obviously, they're capable of giving up some big plays through the air at times. And their coverage scheme suits him really well. There's a huge splits for him based on coverage scheme. 31% target share against single high coverage, 19% against two high coverage. Lions are a 59% rate of single high coverage. So he's going to get one-on-one matchups on the outside, and Baker's going to be looking his way all day in those matchups. And so especially since this game has shootout potential from both sides, this could be a monster game from Evans. He could easily put up the biggest number on the slate.
Yeah. And with Baker having low ownership and him having low ownership, you really don't need to add a second play and hope that, you know, they put, you know, Baker gets you 20, Mike Evans gets you 35, and then you mix up the rest of the slate. You should have plenty of money to do it, to get that magic combo. That would be my thoughts, but I think that, and the other thing I'll throw out is Dome. Mike Evans. Agreed. Dome against the Lions. Yeah. Let's move to the last game. We want to get this show in a good time. It's the big game of the week from a fan kind of perspective. The Chiefs going into Buffalo. Ryan, tell us about your props on this game. Your prop.
Yeah, I'm going with Dalton Kincaid over 4.5 receptions. I've been talking about coverage scheme a lot on this pod, it feels like, but I'm going back to it again here because this is really based on the matchup with the Chiefs. And it showed up in the last meeting. He had 5 receptions on 8 targets when these teams played earlier in the year. That was one of only 4 games in which he saw 8 or more targets. And I don't think it was a fluke because the Chiefs are a too high coverage team, 61% rate outside the red zone. That's the second highest rate in the league. They really live in too high coverage. The Bills, their target distribution actually doesn't change that much depending on the coverage team, but the way they use Kincaid changes a lot. In single high coverage, he'll get some opportunities downfield, and he just doesn't get those in two high coverage. He's really sort of the check down guy. So he's going to see opportunities, but he's going to see the same amount of opportunities, but he's going to have a much higher catch rate against two high coverage. In fact, against two high coverage, 4.4 air yards per target, 7.8 against single high. So he's seeing these short targets, which leads to a 95% catch rate for him against two high coverage, 69% against single high. So he's getting a lot of these just real short you know, dump off type passes. So he doesn't need a huge volume. Like I said, he had 8 targets in their last meeting. He probably doesn't even need that because he could very easily come out with 5 catches and 5 targets. It might only produce 20 yards because they're all dump off passes. But I think he's going to get the enough usage in this game to hit the over.
Does Gabe Davis being active? We saw his role really diminish when Knox and Gabe Davis were both there. Any concern?
I don't think so because of the coverage scheme theme and the way that he's used against this 2-high coverage. He's not stretching the field in the way that the wide receivers are. He's really just that check down guy. And that role is going to probably stay the same regardless of who's out there at wide receiver.
All right. The quarterbacks in this game, we do have some weather concerns, but nothing that would take me off these guys if you like them. Your thoughts, Adam, on the 2 quarterbacks in this game, any one or the other? You were big on Pat Mahomes last week. Did that carry over to this week?
No, because Patrick Mahomes, so from a point per dollar perspective, he's actually pretty similar to Josh Allen, but Josh Allen's the only expensive quarterback that I'm interested in this week if I'm not playing Baker Mayfield or Jared Goff. And that's because even though they have similar median projections, Mahomes has been fighting an uphill battle towards the ceiling game all year, whereas Josh Allen, his basically every game has been a ceiling performance, and that's because the entire offense rides on, his every movement. So while we have, maybe if they both have median games, they end up with around 21 points, but much, much easier path to 35 points for Josh Allen than you have for Patrick Mahomes. So, and Allen's easier to stack. I mean, you don't even know who you're going to stack Patrick Mahomes with. So Allen's the only expensive option I'll be considering.
Yeah, I agree. And they've shown during the playoffs that they're willing to run him, you know, and when I mean playoffs, I mean down the stretch when they needed to win every game, all of a sudden they ran him more designed runs like we had seen before. It's risky, but, you know, I have to see how everything works out. But Josh Allen might be that 70% guy for me.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people early seem to like the Chiefs to win this game. I know that the defense is really banged up for the Bills, but we've seen the Chiefs offense not be very good. All right, so thoughts on Pacheco at 35% and Cook at 25%? Buy or sell, Adam? Just quick. Just say buy or sell on each of these guys.
Okay, I'll sell them both.
Okay. Let's move over to wide receiver. I happen to like Rashi Rice a lot here at 25%. If he gets up to 40, not as much. I'm not on Diggs. He just doesn't look right. He just doesn't look right. You know, I would not be shocked if we saw him being hurt and finding that out later. I'm kind of on Shakir as my favorite play. Your thoughts on the pass catchers in this game, Ryan? I mean, Adam, sorry, I did that again.
So I think I'll go with Diggs just because Diggs is the same price as Rice, but he's going to be like 12% owned compared to Rice's 25%. But you're absolutely right. You're not feeling comfortable playing with him. He has not looked right. They gave him like 7 targets in the first half last week, and it almost felt like they were only doing that so he wouldn't get mad. Because in the second half, they really didn't utilize him at all. And all of the targets were pretty short, easy completion. So it doesn't seem right. But if you're going to play Josh Allen and you have Stephon Diggs staring you in the face at 12%, and Shakir is a great play that everyone's going to be on, I'm probably just going to throw in a bunch of double and triple stacks that include Diggs.
Yeah. My thought is this. I can get 2x to even 3x on Diggs. Even if I put him, the optimizer I use allows you to put in the exact percentage that you want in a stack, right? Yeah. So I could put 30, if I'm playing 70% Josh Allen, and I say the max I want of Diggs is 30%, and I'm forcing that 30%, well, I'm going to get 21% Steph Diggs, right? So, that all the more to me makes me want to play heavy on Josh Allen. Anybody, Ryan, in this game that you like more than another?
Well, before we move on, we should acknowledge that Diggs, you mentioned Diggs being potentially injured. He was on the injury report today and didn't practice resting a foot injury. Sounds like there's no fear of him not playing, but you're right that he is dealing with an injury right now. So if you're concerned about the fact that he doesn't look right, you know, there, we do have some evidence now that he is dealing with something. As far as other guys, I would have, it sounds like I have a little bit more interest in James Cook than either of you, just because the Chiefs have had some busts in their run defense this year. They
You've really been on that every week, the Chiefs.
Yeah, and Cook is definitely an explosive player. So, you know, if they have a couple busts and he gets some open running lanes, it has the potential for him to, you know, break a couple big plays and put up a decent number.
All right, I got one last question, and that is for Adam. In the whole slate, you know, we talked about your showdown person. From your showdown knowledge, who are the really off-the-radar guys? Are there one or two names you can give us?
I don't know if it's off the radar, but I'll give one just because it goes with the theme of Jared Goff. It's Jameson Williams, just because we're so sure that Josh Reynolds is going to be the guy that we need, with Khalif Raymond likely sidelined and Jared Goff stacks maybe being popular. But Jameson Williams is looking like he's going to be about like half the ownership of Josh Reynolds, and he's just the archetype where, first of all, they're the same price. So if one of them is going to be 30%, just give me the one that's not 30%. But he's also the type of archetype that you're looking for when you're trying to throw a dart. So I'll be a little bit more invested in Jameson Williams in my Jared Goff stacks.
Yeah, I think that is good. I'm still seeing him now. He's up to 35% too. So that is
real. I saw him at 18. I'll have to look again.
Yeah, I'm just looking real quick. I mean, I'm seeing 2.5% Christian Watson, and less than 1% Dontavian Wicks. I'll throw those two names out to, you know, dig a little deeper and maybe get into that. Ryan, last thing is for you. Could you just sum up for us all four of your props, because you are the prop master general?
Yeah, for sure. So we did one prop on each game. CJ Stroud under 242.5 passing yards. Jordan Love over 22.5 completions. David Montgomery anytime touchdown. That's probably my favorite prop of the week. And then Dalton Kincaid over 4.5 receptions.
All right. That is going to do it for this jam-packed session of the Sharp Best Ball. Sharp Best Ball. Habit is hard to break. The Sharp Prop and DFS Show. With my co-host Ryan McChrystal and Adam Wilde. Guys, thank you as always for your great insight and for helping me to be a smarter player. And we will see you guys next week.